One of the things that I learned was that if I feel happy, I have to tell other people that I feel happy by putting a smile on my face. And other people don't have to have that thought process. And so that's exhausting for me to be like, oh, I feel happy. The race is enjoyable. I must smile. And then smile. And so that's really exhausting. And then I run out of energy. And it takes me a like long time, like weeks to recover. And so people, they see me and they meet me at a race and they see this person that seems to them to be well put together. And they imagine that that's what every day is like for me.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Ryan Steiner. Ryan is a returning guest. He was here back in episode 52, and in that episode, we talked about his transformation. He went from weighing over 700 pounds to being an ultra runner, and that's a good story. Talks a little bit about the details of how he made that transition and the time it took him. His story has inspired people, and he's often recognized at races. And Ryan is also autistic. And so in this episode, we talk about how autism affects him as a runner and his interaction with people in the running community. Ryan has overcome plenty of challenges to get to where he's at, and he's even looking ahead for bigger challenges. Great inspiration. Here's my conversation with Ryan Steiner. Well, I was looking back. I know you were a guest on episode, I think, 52. So it was about a year ago, I think we last spoke. So can you give just a little kind of brief history about who you are? Because I'm sure there's a lot of new people who haven't met you before and so or haven't heard about you. So tell a little bit about who you are.
Well, my name's Ryan. I'm autistic and I'm obsessed with running. I got there later in life. I used to be obsessed with food. I weighed 700 plus pounds, and now I have ultra dreams that I chase on a daily basis. But I think that the thing that defines me the most for myself personally is that I am a dad of an autistic child. So we both have autism, and so I get to show her the world through my experience and kind of just share things with her in a way that I don't really get to connect with other people. And she also is in a wheelchair, so I push her while we're chasing our ultra dreams. And we've run 50K together so far, but hopefully someday we'll run 100 miles.
Yeah. So your goal is to run 100 someday.
Yeah. With Paula, my personal 100-mile hopefully will be next year, at the Hennepin. Okay. But Paula will pace me on that one, 'cause I'm not sure if she's ready to go for 24 plus hours.
Yeah. That would be a long time for her. And you have a specialized, you call it a chariot, right? For her.
Yeah, we call it the chariot. It's a racing wheelchair. It's designed specifically to run endurance races with people who are physically disabled. So it's pretty cool and fast. And we used to run with a stroller, and then we ran with a lot of people know it like a burly, but like a trailer that you can hook to your bike or run with. But nothing compares to the specialized chariot, and that's what it is. Like, your chariot awaits, my child.
Yeah. If I remember, does the burly, because I remember I used to road cycle. Does the burly only have one wheel?
Oh, maybe the Burley has one wheel, so I guess that's not as
okay. Because okay. you're saying no, it was, I can't remember. It's been too long for me. There was the Burley might be the two wheel, the Bob. They had like a couple of different names and a couple of different variants. So yeah, okay. So one that was made for a bicycle. Like one, how did
it has like one wheel on the back, two wheels on the back, and then you hook it to your bike. But if you're reusing it as a stroller, it has an additional wheel that goes on the front.
Okay. See, I was trying to envision how, you know, something that would work with a bike you could adapt to run with.
Yeah. The one she has now, actually, the racing one, it's meant for endurance sports. And so the reason we got the one we did and not a little bit lighter one for me was because this one also attaches to a bike. You take off the front wheel. And where the spokes would go in on your front tire, it hooks to a bicycle, and you can pull it.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah. That's kind of cool. So, do you cycle as well?
I do. Well, I like to ride my bike, but last year some friends came together and helped buy an Elliptigo. Have you ever seen those?
Is that the stand up? It's like an elliptical machine, but it's driving a bicycle,
but it has a longer stride than an elliptical machine. And it really simulates, it's like this like slow motion simulation of running. And so you're working all those running muscles without the impact. So it's not, you can't replace running because you need that impact force to build up your endurance, but it's also a really great supplemental. And so that's what I like to ride right now.
Yeah. I've seen people with those, the bicycle and it looks, when I first saw it, I thought that is kind of the strangest thing I've seen for a while.
Yeah. It's on the list of top 10, bicycles that are eye catching.
Yeah. Yeah, because it looks like somebody is, you know, I didn't notice that the stride was longer, but I mean, it looked one. Well, and the handlebars move as well when you're
striding? No, that's the street strider. I've rode one of those. It's a little more difficult. You got to be more coordinated. I'm very awkward. I trip over my own feet while running. Yeah, I couldn't get it to go upright.
Like you said, it is a little bit more. Yeah, these were on the street, and you know, I looked at the motion and the fact, you know, of like normally, you know, riding a bicycle, your hands are in one position, and this was just like a regular elliptical machine, and so it looked like they could actually use their arms to move the thing forward, and I wasn't sure how they steered.
Yeah, with mine, the handlebars stay still like a bicycle.
Okay, that would be a little bit more.
it was scary to learn to get off of it, but now I'm a pro with it. It was weird. I need a helmet to even get off of this bicycle.
Yeah. Now, you have run. I mean, you started running. You were kind of walking and losing weight, and you kind of gradually eased into running, if I remember right. Is that your experience?
Yeah. I started out, I was like, I'm going to Forrest Gump it, but with walking. And then I was like, well, walking, I want to go further, faster. So.
and you're, if I remember right, you said when we last spoke, you lost the weight over a period of quite a long time, if I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a journey of at least 10 years trying to get to where I am.
Well, and you also had a goal. I mean, you've lost some even in the last year, if I remember right.
Yeah, I did the Hennepin 50K last year. And from the date that I ended that until February, I really like cut down my mileage and cut down my calories. So like, you can't, you know, lose weight really hardcore when you're training really hardcore for an ultra, because that like messes with your recovery. So I wanted to see how much I could drop and increase my pace and stuff, because it's addicting to get good at something that you already love. And so I lost 80 pounds since my last 50K.
Since your last 50K. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and so you have to kind of, you, so like what you said, sounds like you have to balance the weight loss against your running and training. Is that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like if I want to drop a whole lot at one, at like in a faster period of time, you really have to watch how much calories you're counting or how much calories you're taking away with being able to maintain recovery.
Yeah. So how'd you do on the Hennepin? You said was that your first 50K?
It was my first live 50K. My very first 50K was a virtual 50K. Which was the previous October. And so, yeah, this last October, I did 50K and pushed my daughter, Kala, the whole way. It was brutal, really, because the heat and humidity was really bad. And it's along the canal, and it just sucks out all the hydration in your whole body. And I had really bad cramps at the marathon mark. And so I have just a few miles to go, and they were the longest miles imaginable because I just couldn't stand up straight. So it ended up taking me 11 and a half hours.
Wow. Well, so was that, I know a lot of the 50Ks have, some of them have pretty tight cutoffs. Were you able to make it?
Oh yeah, I made the cutoff. That's reason that I actually chose the Hennepin as the race that I wanted to do as my first 50K is because that has an extremely generous cutoff. It's 21 hours. Because it runs parallel with the 100-mile race. And so once it starts in the evening, and once it starts, then you have until the 100 is over to finish it.
Okay. So you say it starts in the evening, so you ran through the night?
Yeah.
Those are interesting races.
Yeah.
So was that your first night race?
Yes.
So how did that go? You said it was a canal. Was it like a rail to trail?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a crushed limestone. So like kind of a cross between, road and trail.
Okay.
Like surface feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a good surface to run on.
Yeah.
So, and you've gotten, I know that you've, become kind of familiar with the group there in the
Ornery Mule, yeah. Ornery Mule Racing,
yeah,
yeah.
And they're the ones who put on the Hennepin, if I remember right.
They do a lot of the races that I've done this year because I really once I get a group of people I'm socializing with, it's easier than going to a whole new group. Is just to kind of stick with that and then branch out like with them, like be invited from someone that I've already kind of got to know. It kind of makes a social safety net for me. Cause to be able to communicate with someone else, I have to mask my autism. And people say that I should just be my authentic self. But if I were my authentic self, I wouldn't be talking to people because I want to be in my own world. And so having people around who are safe like that, to like help me navigate a confusing things at a race that I've never been to before. It's really nice. So I like having the people at that community.
Yeah. And you'd written something on Facebook about just kind of that tension. I think you kind of talk about people saying, you know, people who know you and you've been around and, you know, who've kind of made some comments about your autism. And, so what is, as somebody who I know you from afar, when you're in those kind of social situations, what are some of the things that kind of you have to adapt to be able to socialize with strangers?
When I first am in a new situation, I always have a hat on, because it sincerely grounds me, and usually sunglasses, because then I don't have to make eye contact and I can kind of look in other directions. And once I'm comfortable with people, I can socialize a lot better. And so that's kind of how I make adaptions for myself. And you know, the thing that is that I can pretend for brief periods of time, and I'm really, really good at it. And so people get the impression that they say things like, oh, well, you don't really seem very autistic compared to people that I know, or something like that. But it's because I've practiced, because I want to connect. And it's been made clear to me in my life that if I'm going to connect, I'm going to have to connect on the ground, on the other playing ground, because people aren't coming to me. And so I have to pretend and I have to smile. One of the things that I learned was that if I feel happy, I have to tell other people that I feel happy by putting a smile on my face. And other people don't have to have that thought process. And so that's exhausting for me to be like, oh, I feel happy. The race is enjoyable. I must smile. And then smile. And so that's mm-hmm. really exhausting. And then I run out of energy. And it takes me a like long time, like weeks to recover. And so people, they see me and they meet me at a race and they see this person that seems to them to be well put together. And they imagine that that's what every day is like for me. But I pick a few races and that is my socialization. And then I go back into my bubble and I put a little Facebook post every day. And no matter what negativity happened in my day, no matter how hard it was or whatever, I try to make a positive post, because what I want to do is highlight how well someone with autism can cope and share the positive parts. But it doesn't mean that it's not hard. And so it's really hard to balance that, like showing people what I'm capable of without them deciding that because I'm capable of things, that I must not have that bad of autism.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
right? Yeah, that makes well, and I'm thinking, you know, it's like those of us who are ultramarathon runners. I mean, when people who don't run ultramarathons find out that that we run these crazy distances, they have the idea that well, you know, we can just go out and run and it's easy. For you and for people who run ultras, I mean, there are days when you go out and run and you don't feel like it. And yeah. There are days when you go out and you've got certain workouts to do. And it's like, no, I don't want to run hills today. I don't want to do it's, you know, that is you're talking about it with autism and I would imagine that it would have some of its own challenges, but yeah, runners, we have all runners have similar experiences and could kind of identify with you.
Well, that's what I like about ultra running, is that it's a really great way to, kind of parallel autism in like helping people understand. And so like what you're saying, because I do have a lot of hard days, but I keep pushing forward. And one of the things that helps me learn to push forward is that I have learned consistency, and I love my love of being able to connect with people has allowed me to really push through a lot of really rough training times. And I love running, but I love what running brings to my life. And I have to tell myself sometimes that I love running and push the negative thoughts out of my head that tell me that I don't want to go out and run today because it's too hot, or, you know, it's been a long day and I didn't get out until the evening, because it's so hard to run in the evening. And I have this night race coming up, And so, yeah, no, that's exactly that. I think that that's one of the things that makes me feel so connected in the ultra community, is because I have been able to connect my experience as an autistic person with other people. And we are such a diverse community of people that everybody's experienced some sort of being human, since we're all human. And I don't know, it just, by pushing ourselves to the limits, we know what it takes to do that. And so you get respect from each other for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then you also have, I mean, you have to kind of balance your the things that you do with your daughter, because I mean, she has that as well. And so, you know, not only, you know, there may be days when you may be okay, and she's not willing to connect. you have an additional thing to consider there.
Well, actually, anecdotally, that happened yesterday. I needed a 5-mile run. And so I live on a rail trail, and we like to try to remove as many steps, because transitions to new parts of whatever you're doing are often a battle for people with autism, and it is for me and Kala. So I like to put her in her chariot, open the garage door, and take off running. We used to have to drive to the trail, and so then getting in the car, getting out of the car, and all of that was a lot of extra steps. And so the less steps we have, the better it is to get out the door. But still, sometimes it's too much. And so I ran out yesterday. I got all the way. I had 1.5 miles left, and Kala was done. And I had to call my wife and have her come pick Kala up at one of the road crossings. And then I had to push an empty chariot the rest of the way home, because our van is in the shop.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you can adapt, and, you know, that you've got some of that support. And so
isn't that why we train, though? Like, 'cause people think we can just go out and do that. But the reason that we can adapt during a race when something happens, and the reason that we can do those kind of things, is because we've practiced those things. And for me, that's what I do with social things in my head. Like, if I'm pacing, I'm running social conversations through my head, like practicing possible things that might happen in a conversation so that I can be better prepared. And that's what I do with running. I recently started what I call suffer runs. And so they're where I'm trying to simulate the end of a race. So I don't put any glide on, no chafe protection. I wear the crappiest pair of socks I have so I can get them sweaty real fast. And, you know, I try to make myself as uncomfortable as I can before I even walk out the door. And I do that on my shorter runs, like a 5-mile run or less. And then I push through all of the suck, so that when it sucks, that last bit of a race, I've already gotten used to the way my body feels. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah. And we were talking, I was talking to somebody today, and said something about, they made some comment about, you know, experiencing pain. And I says, well, pain, it's natural, and it'll bring you to enlightenment.
Yeah.
So how does Kala do with the races then?
She loves to race. Kala is really coming out of her shell because of the racing. She used to be so scared of people, and I have a little bit of difficulty with her grabbing the wheels right now, only on training runs. If we're in a race, she's happy as can be to sit there, and when we pass people, she insists that I say good job, because we've been passed so many times and other people tell us that we're doing good. And so that's her. She just loves to be in a race and watching other people and running up and socializing, and then sitting at the finish line and watching other people come through, and she just cheers and laughs, and it's a lot of fun to see her so socially engaged, because where she was when we started this was definitely not where she is now.
Yeah. And you started your kind of getting into the ultra community. Was it about a year ago? I mean, how long have you been kind of on this?
It's been a while. Journey? I mean, like, I really got immersed. I suppose the last year has been my really immersion into the community and being a part of the community. I've been a Facebook lurker for at least 4 years. And I've been, you know, chasing the dream of ultra for several years. And I've been running on and off for the whole 10 years of my weight loss journey.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cause I remember I think I got acquainted with you from a Facebook post. You posted a little bit about, some experiences that you've had out there. So what is your goal? You said your goal for 100, what does that look like, you know, to run 100 miles?
It looks like a dream come true. I like the Hennepin, because of when it is and everything. So that will be my first 100. I'm getting more confident and, branching out from Honoree Meal races more lately. But it's still my safe place. So I want to try my 100 miles first there. And so that'll be next October, the first week of October this year. And it's kind of, I'm not, if I can get sub 7 hours at the Hennepin 50K this year, then I'm for sure, I'm going for the 100. That's my goal. And so that's.
Yeah, sub 7 hours for 50K is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty good pace.
I'm hoping. also depends on Kala, on if she's needs to stop and things like that. Mm-hmm. So she's getting bigger, so we have to have a tent to change her and stuff like that at aid stations, and so we have to think about how long that will take.
Yeah. So what have you been doing as far as your training? Because I think in the last year you've kind of increased your pace quite substantially to be able to run, look at sub 7 hours.
Yeah, no, for sure. I have a coach, she has been great to really kind of just take my obsession with running and fill my head with all the things I need to know about my body, and really has helped me, train using heart rate training so that I can use my heart rate to then see what my body should feel like at each of these different levels. And just before I was just trying to run as far and as many miles as I could, and now I do a lot of speed work and strength training and things like that. And she's really helped me focus that energy into right where it needs to be. And after I ran the Hennepin last year, I dropped my miles down to like 20 mile weeks from 40, 50 mile weeks. And so I was able to really just focus on speed and getting faster. And my top speed, like the fastest I went during the Hennepin, like that I could hold, was a 17 minute mile. And now if I were to just run super easy with a heart rate, barely doing anything, only burning reserve fats, I would be running a 15 minute pace. So, and that's
a significant improvement.
That's not even pushing at all. So I'm pretty confident about the Hennepin because of just that change.
Yeah, and so you've done the heart rate training has kind of been your thing to get yourself faster.
Yeah.
Well, besides
speed work. But knowing like when I, instead of like a pad target pace, we have a target heart rate.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm familiar with heart rate training, and you know, a lot of people I've talked to use that. I know it works well for a lot of people. And a lot of coaches use that.
Yeah. It's been great for me for sure.
It's great to hear. Great to hear that success.
I mean, and you know, 15-minute mile is the easy now. My goal for the longest time was to get a 45-minute 5K, and I kind of chuckle at myself now because my 5K PR, my most recent 5K PR is a 34-minute. So, and I got the 45-minute in December, and so it's been quite the increase in speed.
Well, that is a significant improvement, as well as very very quick.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I'm blown away every time I come to the finish line. I'm like, I did it again. It's got to be some kind of mistake.
That's cool. Well, and you did you I remember you were announcer for one of the races?
Yeah, we did. I was on the live stream for the Kettle Moraine 100, and then also I did the online announcing for their spring challenge for Honoring Mule Racing.
Okay. How's that feel for you? I mean, is that a hard thing to do? I know you did well with it.
I'm glad that you thought I did well. I was a little nervous. I've gotten a lot more confident because of being on podcasts and realizing that I could make these connections from the safety of my home. And then, so that was, even though it was a broadcast to a lot of people, it was just the close-knit bit of people that I already knew, and then a few strangers. And because there was strangers, I had a little bit of trouble, but my Honoring Mule people had my back and, you know, just helped me through the stumbling points because they've gotten to know me. And it's been really kind of great to feel like that. Cause I mean, I guess I've said that I don't have friends, but I've had friends, cause outcasts find outcasts, but I've never really felt like I was part of a community before. I didn't have that feeling. And now I feel like I'm part of a community and I like that, and running gave me that. And I guess that's what helps me be able to calm down when I'm doing this. Cause I have everything I've ever wanted, so I don't really care what anybody thinks if I mess up now.
That's well, and you've gotten some, you know, some attention too. I'm sure people will recognize you, even, you know, at races where you're in your element.
It has been a lot of fun for people to recognize me. I didn't realize that it wasn't the experience of everyone. I just thought that the way people treated me was the way that every ultra runner treats all of us, you know what I mean? And then I had someone pace with me during the Indy Mini, and she said that this is not her experience of running, because people were like, "Hey, Ryan!" And one person who was from my hometown shouted, "Hey, Terre Haute," because I'm from Terre Haute. It's not where I live now. And he was like, "Looking good." And it was fun because they were like elite runners. And because we got to start the Indy Mini, the wheelchairs, we started right behind the crank wheelchairs. So ahead of the elite athletes. And so that was really fun to be running with like 30,000 people and having people holler your name and like run by and, "Yes, Ryan!" And that got Kala excited every time that people knew who we were.
Yeah. that's great. So, 100 miles is in your future. Is this something that you're going to continue, you think?
Oh yeah. I just keep, whenever a goal gets closer, because what keeps me going is making ridiculous goals. And once everyone is like, yeah, of course Ryan's going to run 100, then I have to make people go, again. and so I have to make a bigger, crazier goal. And so if I finish the 100, then the next goal will be that Kala and I are going to embark on the planning of and executing a cross-continental east to west coast run.
Wow. that is a big goal.
Yeah. And
so have you there are some multi-day runs that you could do to probably get a feel for that, but
yeah.
So with cross continental, that would be a self-supported run then.
Yeah. I mean, I want to kind of figure out how to do it. It's more of just an idea right now. And so I know that, there's a few people who, have done so, a few people who've done it for the record, which will not be me, that I know. And so I want to, you know, pick some brains and see what all I need to do. But as little support as possible, cause I want to do it on a budget. But you know, I want to have a little bit of a crew, even if it's just another bike with me, pulling a big, trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just in the daydreaming about it right now, but I just think it just seems like a fun thing to do, to spend months and months and months waking up every day and making my way across the country with my favorite person in the world.
Well, and yes, there, in fact, I talked to a guy, Thomas Drybala. I think his podcast just came out this week. He is doing it around the world. He's going to go and he's starting in New York and going to run down to Florida and then across the United States. And he's pretty much self-supported. He's done it over in Asia. He talked a little bit about some of the strategy of having to make the hotel reservations, and then you have to get there. And you know, so, yeah, there's a lot of it's very doable. I think that's a cool goal.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I've read a lot of books about people doing it, and I'm in a Facebook group about people who do it, and so I get to watch people. You know, you'd be surprised how many people do just on their own run out and they're like, hey, I'm just going to go travel across the US real quick. we live on a rail trail, like I said, and we see people all the time going by on bikes or running, pushing kind of, I mean, I say chariot, but I bet they don't call it a chariot. but we see people go by with luggage and stuff like that. So I'm sure that it's just people out there doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, there's a lot of different ways to do that. Self-supported, I think that's a great ambition and great goal.
Yeah.
And I think so, you've got the mindset to go out and do crazy things. I mean, things that other people would think are crazy. So, I admire your mindset. Well, thank you a lot, Ryan, for being here as a guest.
Thank you.
I've got some questions that I do at the end. It's a new tradition that I've started. I've called these the bridge questions. So if you're game, I'll
okay.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
I'll go. So for you, when you run, what is the piece of gear that you rely on the most?
My water bladder.
Yes, that is a good one.
I mean, I could run without shoes, no problem, but if I don't have water, I'm done.
That's good. So second question is, what is the strangest thing that you've ever seen when you've been out running?
I don't know. I don't really see a lot of strange things while I'm out on a run. I'm kind of in my own zone. I could tell you the strangest thing someone's ever said to me instead. How about that?
Someone thought that I was
pushing an ice cream cart. She wanted to know if she could order some ice cream from my cart.
I guess they didn't look very closely, did they?
No. I assure you, what's in there is sweet, but you can't eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So the third question is, what is if you were to have a word or a phrase that kind of summarized your philosophy of life and running, what would it be?
True change only happens at the edge of your comfort zone.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I like that. I got an obsession with growing. That was what made me love my wife, was that she also wanted to grow every day. So true change.
Yeah, that's good. I love that. I love that. Cool. Hey, thank you again, and good luck. Good luck with all your training and your running. And I thanks also for the insight that you gave as far as kind of some of the challenges that you face, and I hope that will help some other people kind of understand where you're coming from.
Thank you for having me on again.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.